She's walking to the market and her feet get kind of tired.
So she sits down on the sidewalk,
waits for someone to chance by. When she was younger, she could make it in one stretch. She was dizzy, she stayed happy, and she got by more or less.
Got an hour of words and music for spirit and courage on Stay Human. Today, we're going to take a hike and just keep on moving. That's the Boxing Gandhis. I'm Michael Goldberg. I hope you're ready to take a hike with some of our storytellers coming up in this hour. It's Trail Magic from Jake Dodge. And Mike Elliott takes us with him to the top of a mountain fire tower in Montana. And Gail Blackmer explains how to plan your hike. Before we head out into the wilderness, we're going to take a big city hike with Jeremiah Lind. But first, here's some advice from Run DMC. Our first long walk on today's program comes to us from Jeremiah Lind, who lives in the Bemidji area and remembers a long walk in the big city.
I got off from my job at Canal Jeans that night and started walking south towards Battery Park. I had not been working at Canal Jeans long before discovering it was an awful job. Canal is not far from Battery Park, and I walked down to look at the Statue of Liberty, that beautiful copper lady. I generally avoided the tourist traps as useless wastes of money, but if you could make the trip, get on a boat and look at her up close. The new Colossus. Today had been payday of another awful week. Making minimum wage in 2001 was difficult for everyone, but particularly the unfortunate residents of the most expensive island on planet Earth. I knew just enough math to realize that I could never be able to pay rent, my loans, and eat. One was going to have to go. I had opened a dialogue with the military. No option was too absurd to ignore completely. I started walking to the nearest 9-train home, World Trade Center Plaza. The World Trade Center towers remain the tallest structures I have seen in my life. From beneath them and between them, the vertigo warped my senses and perceptions to a disturbing degree. That night, I swore never to go up in those buildings, and I never did, and I never will. There was the train station. I had in my pocket the last of my cash, $1.50, which I had to get me through to my next paycheck a week from now. Top ramen noodles have kept me alive at crucial junctures in my life. Starving, perhaps, but alive. Not as hungry about it. $1.50 would get me a questionable street hot dog and almost enough ramen to make the week. I was 149 blocks away from home, and I began walking. Walking is the natural state of human beings. It is our lone physical adaptation that places us at an advantage of our predators. We can stand and walk. We can look over terrain and then hide. We can run even. No other primate comes even close while only using their legs. Apes might beat us in a tree fight, sure, but we burn down those trees, pals. Walking anywhere on Earth is a unique experience, and New York is no different. I used Broadway as much as I could. It's a street that runs the length of the island and has a lot to see and do along the way. It is a focus of commercial availability, but also a well-trained walking populace. The herd has been thinned. People have places to be and will get out of your way. There's a flock of birds in flight instinct that allows millions of largely incompetent humans to move around without entirely trampling and otherwise killing one another. Breathtaking as it is terrifying. Lower Manhattan, Washington Square Park, the Flatiron, the Empire State Building, and then you're there, Times Square, the main nerve. A confluence of billions of travelers towards billions more trajectories to see the thing everyone sees when they go to New York City. The place the ball dropped on our newest century. Y2K just the first in an age of failed conspiracies. I tried begging in Times Square only once, and then, as I recall, only for $50,000. Midtown Manhattan. Radio City on the right, and then Carnegie Hall. But how do you get there? Practice. Or by taxi. The taxi drivers also know where it is. And then there he is. Christopher Columbus towering over his circle, with Trump Tower climbing into the sky as a background. Trump Tower was a regular feature of my acting education as a place I had to walk past on my way to class or work. There was a regular flow between it and an adjacent Starbucks where I had seen Kevin Bacon and John Ritter locked in conversation I wished I was having. Those men are both dead now. Somewhere. Broadway gets less and less commercialized as you head north, and more like a neighborhood. There's the massive theater virtually every film is at. There's Gray's Papaya with their delicious hot dogs that are crunchy yet juicy. Tell them if your bun is not toasted. Get the papaya drink for the ultimate experience. Recession special, two dogs and a drink, $2.50. It was good, but I did not have that other dollar. The ramen budget cannot go negative without real funds. Manhattan, Upper West Side. The Beacon Hotel and Theater, the Ansonia Building, and Stand Up New York. At 72nd Street, I am officially in my neighborhood, air quotes made explicit for purposes of radio broadcast. No neighborhood belongs to anyone, but in terms of raw familiarity, Manhattan's Upper West Side is a place that I know, a place I have walked over for miles and miles and miles. I took the subway when I had money, but rarely had money, and so I walked quite a bit. 149th to 72nd Street or 60th Street most days, a 140 to 160 block walking commute, depending on the classes. When my children ask me, I will explain that I walked uphill both ways to acting school, and there will be no hyperbole, because Columbia University exists in a depression within the island. You walk down along Broadway, near where Peter Venkman convinced Ray Stantz to begin busting ghosts, and then the terrain goes back upwards towards Harlem. Uphill both ways, because it is downhill once. Take that, hyperbole. Around Harlem, I start thinking about walking the whole island. But why, Lind? Why? Your feet are already bloody from walking to a job that doesn't allow you to afford shoes, so why do that? Why not go home and scavenge some calories and pass out? Awash in panic depression. I talk myself down, explaining that walking can be therapy, especially when you can't afford therapy. Something about walking makes me feel at peace and in control. Putting one foot in front of the other is something a person can do if they are lucky. Many run, but running makes my joints hurt. And why run when you can walk? Fast, even. Soon enough, I was in the Heights, long before it was a hit musical. Morningside, Hamilton, and Washington Heights. Thinking about it most of the way, and then it seemed dumb not to. To walk the whole island. Upper Manhattan, Hudson Heights, Fort George, and Inwood. And that is the northern tip. The length of Manhattan, a 13.4-mile-long island, plus work and then home, to a total of 15 miles. 15 miles of Manhattan. That night I walked past 9 million-plus souls at various stages of their lives. And then I walked home, and then I slept. I've been on many long walks in my life, through many cold nights, but hope that I will always remember that one.
Thanks to Jeremiah Lind for sharing that long walk with us here on Stay Human. I was out taking my daily walk, just the half mile to the mailbox and back. I was thinking about my friend Denise. She's been planning for weeks to hike part of the El Camino de Santiago in Spain. That's a long hike, a pilgrimage that dates back to the 10th century, longer ago, I guess, as a Roman trade route. I love it, the stuff people will do. I hope she makes that trip. I'd like to have an adventure like that, though maybe not that one. Listening to hiking stories for today's program made me promise myself at least I'm going to get up on the Lake Superior hiking trail this summer. For now, I'm just going to stick with the driveway. It's getting pretty icy out there. When I'm not crunching on the snow, there's stretches of those itty-bitty baby steps. A thing about walking the same trail every day is you notice every little change. I can keep right up with John Latimer's phenology as the seasons turn, but unfortunately, what the seasons are turning to include mud season, and that gravel road changes by the hour. I have always had a kind of a fantasy about taking a long, long hike, maybe the Appalachian Trail someday. I loved Cheryl Strayed's book about the Pacific Trail, though I didn't for a moment kid myself that I might ever do such a thing. I have a friend who is planning to walk around the world. I mean, he says he's serious. He's got it all figured out. He's going to cross oceans in order to walk across every continent till he walks back home to Minnesota. And he's just crazy enough that he might actually do it. I think it's a common urge, probably as old as our thousands of years ago hikes out of Africa, walking to every corner of the globe. Humans have been on a very, very long walk. We're getting some vicarious hikes today. Coming up, local storytellers Jake Dodge and Mike Elliott bring us along. I talked to my old friend Gail Blackmer, who told me about the hike that she planned with friends in her hometown of Effie.
I got a group of friends up there, and yeah, walking is great. We like to walk and like to travel. So a couple of years ago, and now it's going to be close to two and a half, this group of women started talking about taking a hiking and a camping trip, which is easy to talk about. And so word went around, oh, where should we go? Well, somebody threw a dart or in some reason decided that terrific classic hiking trail, the Appalachian Trail, which went Maine to Georgia. Everybody knows the story. Everybody's heard of it. And what you've heard is very alluring. It's one of the three great hiking trails in the United States. So, of course, it's the challenge that these women wanted to think. Well, let's do it. Well, they started planning and thinking and looking at maps and getting on Facebook groups. And when we started out, it was a group of probably about eight women. Well, as time went on, dropped out for one reason or another. Somebody thought, nah, my back won't take it. Somebody else got a little spooked when they heard that someone was murdered on the trail. And me, I just had a total knee replacement. So I didn't think I could go on it. No, I'm not going to be able to go on this. So I watched from the sidelines. Well, the others started getting ready, and in came the maps, of course, and the Facebook groups and the studying and the books. So that went on and on, and then it started getting ready to pack. So you look at the trail, 2,000 miles, maybe we can do 5 miles a day. Well, we're not doing 2,000, but we can maybe do 5 miles a day. That's pretty easy. So start practicing hiking mile, couple of miles, 3 miles and back. Of course, I still had the bum knee. I'm not walking. I still didn't think I'd be able to go. So they're practicing and they're getting in shape and they're starting to order the goods. And of course, you need good quality boots. Why wouldn't you? You need a hiking stick. And now the hiking sticks range from the highest synthetic material to a stick, which people had said they cut a stick. Well, no, they had to get the high-quality sticks. And then you look at your rest of your gear. You got to have a rain suit. You got to have a hat. You got to have a shovel to cover up your morning potty break. You've got to have cooking gear. You got to have a sleeping bag. You got to have a mat. You got to have a tent. And so out come the catalogs. Out go the online shopping. And these girls are chasing back and forth with the lightest, the least expensive, the best deal. But you got to have all that stuff. So this goes on for one full year. Then I had my surgery, and the trip got planned for 90 days later. And I says, I can do it. Sure, let me come. Well, they had all the gear, you know, down to the cooking pot that boiled water in 90 seconds, but of course it's only one cup for one person, so everybody's got to have their own. Now we need the food and freeze-dried stuff, but weight is everything. You know, you got to cut the labels off your tea bags because you can't have an extra ounce, and you got to pack it in a backpack. So we're trading around. Well, I ended up, if I'm going to go 90 days post-surgery, I'm doing my exercises, and I got the clearance from the doctor, but I'm pretty spooked about keeping up. And I borrow poles and boots and backpack and something else, rain jacket. I borrowed about half my gear. So we pack up, finally hit the road. First, now we got to drive from Minnesota to wherever we're going to start, state of Virginia, Shenandoah National Forest. We chose that because that section is, well, maybe one of the easier ones. It's not quite so up and down for you know, lots of elevation changes. And it's got good views. So we drive now. Well, now we got a road trip, too. We're down to four women by this time, me included with my, you know, brand new knee. And a puppy. And, yeah, somebody had a puppy, so we got a two-month-old puppy. That's got to come, too. And the puppy gets its own backpack because it's got to carry its feed. And it's got to have a collapsible water bowl so you can pack it. Anyhow, we're on the road, so it's a road trip, too. We get there, finally, after 2 days and finding motels that take a puppy. But now we're into Pennsylvania and eastern states. What fun, again, to be seeing that kind of country. And we enter the Shenandoah National Park. And by here, I'm thinking it's wilderness. There's signs saying bear, you know, country, must have food contained, all of that. And then there's another sign that says Washington, D.C., 80 miles. Couldn't believe it, but beautiful country. But we get there, and now we're meeting up with the other, the fourth woman, who is driving now after a year in planning. Even though she sold her home and moved, she wasn't going to miss this trip she'd been planning and spending money on and practicing for and packing. So she's coming from Colorado. But we do. We meet up in the Shenandoah National Park, exact stated hour. Jill is hiking down the trail, and she meets us at a parking lot. And she's carrying her pack. And suddenly we're realizing how hard it is to hike with a pack. She's made it, but we're all looking. She's telling us this was not that much fun. Okay, well, let's go to, find a spot where we can start. By this time, we've all tried on our packs. And all right, around 38 pounds. We all put it on our backs and stand there, look at each other. Can't, you know, we've got visions of going through the woods and finding a little spot to kick away the brush and set up our camps and then pack up in the morning and head off again for our next 5 mile stretch. And, you know, along comes a national campground and we pull in. And we pick up one of the last two or three spots, and we set up camp. And the next day, we take our fanny packs with a few granola bars, a little water, some, you know, sunscreen, and have a great time doing day trips, coming back to the camp at night, making a fire. Boy, was that a good decision, to stand there looking at each other with 40-pound packs on our back and knowing we're not going to... I couldn't have taken a step on that knee. Uh-uh. So down we camped, and camping was fun, too.
Gail Blackmer tells stories from Effie, Minnesota, and she gets around. That new knee is a good one.
She's crazy, she got diamonds on the soles of her shoes. Well, that's one way to lose these walking blues. Diamonds on the soles of your shoes. She was physically forgotten, but then she slipped into my pocket with my car keys. She said, "You've taken me for granted because I please you. Wearing these diamonds." And I could say, ooh, 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 ooh,
about, as if everybody here would know exactly what I was talking about. I'm talking about diamonds on the soles of her shoes. Sign of a wave. The poor boy changes clothes and he puts on aftershave to compensate for his ordinary shoes. And she said, honey, take me dancing, but they ended up by sleeping in a doorway by the bodegas and the lights on over Broadway, wearing diamonds on the soles of their shoes. And I could say, ooh, ooh, ooh. And everybody here would know what I was talking about. I mean, everybody here would know exactly what I was talking about. I'm talking about diamonds on the soles of my shoes, yeah. Well, that's one way to lose these walking blues. Diamonds on the soles of my shoes.
Tune to your Northern Community Radio service, heard worldwide at kaxe.org and broadcasting from Grand Rapids and Bemidji at KAXE-KBXE. It's independent, listener-supported, and community-engaged radio. On this show, we share stories from some of the folks around the area. Today, stories about the Long Walk. Our program also receives support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. My friend Jake Dodge of Deer River actually did the thing that so many of us have only imagined maybe doing someday. He hiked for weeks and weeks on the Appalachian Trail. I asked him to tell me what it was like when he was making the decision, getting from the idea of doing it to actually ready to go.
Wondering whether or not I'd be physically capable of completing a through hike, because it's a really long distance hike. And then being able to be mentally sound enough to be able to complete that as well, because it's not just the walking that you're battling so much. Your mind will start playing some tricks on you too, and there's nothing else to occupy your mind. Had a lot on my mind, yeah. With the passing of my sister, it was a good way for me to be able to go, come to terms, and then be able to come back to reality as well. You know, natural life, natural rhythms, they all lead to a good life. I can't remember which mountain it was, but on this particular mountain, there's a what I know as a memorial tree, where there's like a particular tree and people would start hanging ornaments in it because it was planted by a family or something like that in memorial of somebody that had passed. In this case, it was particularly suicide prevention. You get up there and the logbook has a story of who it was. But I was alone, and for whatever reason, that particular day was probably the hardest day that I had to... I was thinking of my sister a lot, and it was getting hard. But it was interesting because the only thing that was feeling right was to keep walking, you know. So you get up there, and then you're like, oh, well, maybe it's just a particular feeling this mountain has. You know, everybody probably faces a mental challenge on this trail, you know. So I had a feather in my hair. So that was what I left as an ornamentation, as a feather for that man, too. So I wasn't alone as much as I would think. Like, as a southbounder, they would be a lot more solo-type hiking. But as a northbounder, we start out, and they call them bubbles of people. So there'll be a wave and a wave and a wave of a large group of people starting on a certain day. And I started on March 22nd, 2019. I think I was hiker 1534, and I believe we had close to 2,500 hikers or even more start out. Trail mileage is 2,182 miles. So, and what I did is about 600 miles of that, so it's about a quarter of the trail. But the social life there was good. Everybody that trusted another hiker, you know, like everything we have is on our back at that point in time. So as a hiker, like we could leave our bags on the side of the trail and nobody would rummage through them or take them or anything like that, because the only people coming by are other hikers. But you'd go into town and it would change, you know, because we're hikers and they're townspeople. And, of course, we haven't showered. We haven't done, you know, we're not very clean and we stink, and, you know. So, like, particularly with trail days, it's a big trail town, Damascus, Virginia. And one time a year, like 5,000 hikers descend upon this city, and they have a parade and everything like that, and they have a water balloon fight in the parade because it's the hikers that are hiking the parade, and it was to give us a bath, you know. So it's a fun thing, but it was to, you know, they're tired of smelling us, so to give us a bath. And then to be in a tramley, it's not so much... Like you ask somebody if you can hike with them or anything like that. It just kind of happens, you know. Trail family is what tramley, a trail term. And the tramley that I had, we probably leapfrogged quite a few times. So I leapfrogged with the tramley that I was with because I was trying to pull some heavy miles. And then by doing that, you're not really enjoying the trail if you're pulling some heavy miles, because all you're doing is hiking, washing your feet, you know, controlling your breathing. And then you're not looking at the flora and fauna when you're doing that. And the point is to enjoy the trail, and the trail's not going anywhere. You'd sit down, and you'd eat a little bit of supper, and that was usually the social time. When you're on the trail, you come across somebody. If you're both the same speed, you probably wouldn't pass them. Usually camp together and then continue at your own rate. So, and that's how the tramway kind of builds up, and eventually everybody's knows each other's patterns, and then you're kind of a group of us move along, you know, like, I'm ready, you're ready, let's go. Well, we had 9 people in our tramway, and it was a pretty good month at that. Yeah, just you become really close with those people because you're caring for each other. It's a friendship that'll last forever. I still contact with my tramley now, you know. And then, of course, my girlfriend come from the trail, too. So. So trail magic is where somebody that used to hike or somebody that really supports the hikers will come to the trail, and they'll either hand out water, food items, snack items. They'll cook brats and just wait for people to come by. And they call them trail angels. but the act of it is what they call trail magic. And you could, it could be something as simple as coming along and finding a chest full of water with nobody else around, you know. The saying goes, the trail will provide. So if you need something and you're hiking, eventually that will come to you, you know. I had a pair of gloves and I was wearing them. It was a little bit chilly out on the top of the mountain. We had a hard wind, a little mist in the air and stuff like that, and we were descending. So we were coming down the mountain, and I must have rolled a cigarette or something like that, but I took my gloves off. I usually I'd put them in the breast strap so that I knew where they were and I could grab them out and put them back on pretty quick. And I went, put one glove on, and then I looked, and it wasn't, the other one wasn't there. So I turned around, I couldn't see it on the trail, and I wasn't about to go back and do negative miles. So I was like, well, lost a glove. Went down the mountain, I go get to the next gap. And then another guy come down the, down behind us, and he was, hey, I believe this is yours. He said, I needed it, though, so thank you. The trail will provide, and it'll provide in a lot of different ways. Not just the glove, but if I needed money, I could come, I'd be in town, and a lot of times somebody would come to a local hiker hangout because they needed a day labor and ask if anybody wanted to work. So I was at the hiker ministry, and we're standing outside having, just having a good visit, and a lady comes up and, hey, hikers, which one of you want to make a little bit of money today? So we look around at each other, and nobody else was raising their hand, so I did. Can you stack some firewood? So yeah, I do that all the time. So after I stacked the firewood, it happened to be for the tavern, and the tavern is a wood-fired pizza place as well. So that's the wood that I was stacking and splitting for them. And then they had me carry a box, and it was down in the supply area. So I went to go set it down to be able to move a couple more. And I said, is there something I can set this on? I know I can't set it on the ground in a restaurant like that. And I'm like, oh, yeah. You know ServSafe? I know enough to say I don't know enough. But they hired me on for a week. You know, I was rolling out pizza dough and stuff like that. And it worked out. It made me quite a ways on the trail just from that one week worth of work, you know. So, and you can change your diet a little bit, eat some oatmeal and stuff like that, and it's not really not that expensive, you know. But if a person were to buy Mountain House meals, and that's like $10 to $11 a meal for a dehydrated meal. They're good, but I don't want to carry 10 meals either. But that was also a piece of trail magic. And a hiker, he was at the gap, and he had three boxes full of Mountain House dehydrated meals. He's like, I'm sponsored by them. So they give me these boxes to give to people. So I was like, cool. He's like, take as many as you need. You know, just save some for the next guy behind you. And that's the part about the trail magic, is you don't want to, you don't take more than you need either, so it goes back to somebody else as well.
Thanks to Jake Dodge for being part of Stay Human today.
Too little feet to get me across the mountain. Too little feet to carry me away into the woods. Too little feet to make a mountain in the cloud coming down, cloud coming down, cloud coming down, cloud coming down. I hear the voice of the ancient ones chanting magic words from a different time. Well, there is no time, there is only this rain. There is no time, that's why I missed my plane. John Muir walked away into the mountains in his old overcoat, a crust of bread in his pocket. We have no knowledge, and so we have stuff. And stuff with no knowledge is never enough to get you there. just won't get you there. The culture exploded into knickknacks and memories. Eagle and bear trinkets, I don't think it's good. Oh man, what am I trying to say? It's a messed up world, but I love it anyway, I love it. Across the city, my little hand to knock upon your door, my little thing for your little thing, big love to lift us up once more to the mountain, to lift us up, lift us up. Tumble us like scree, let us holler at our freedom like a wolf across a valley, like a kid lost in a game. No time, no name. Gonna miss that plane again. I'm gonna stay here with you, baby, and kiss you to a good dream. I'm gonna kiss you. I'm gonna kiss you. Kiss you like you like it. Kiss you like you like it. Kiss you like you like it. I got two little feet to get me across the mountain. Two little feet to carry me away into the woods. Two little feet, a bigger mountain than a cloud coming down, cloud coming down, cloud coming down, cloud coming down. Cloud coming down. Two little feet. A big mountain. Two little feet. A big mountain. Two little feet.
Greg Brown on Stay Human. Our last long walk for today comes from Jacobson area writer Mike Elliott, Jacobson and Points West.
It's always been my John Steinbeck travels with Charlie fantasy to head out west, staying off beaten paths, and journaling about my quest. However, unlike the Pulitzer Prize-winning author, I don't own a dog, so I wanted my longtime Boundary Waters partner, Jim, to be my Charlie. If he said no, I'd find me a dog. There we were last January in front of my fire, sipping cocoa, poring over maps from 8 states. Finally, Jim budged. I think I can swing it, he said, but under 2 conditions. And white might those be? Well, I have to get proper visas from the wife. That's easy, Jim. Just invite her to go along and show her those U.S. Forest Service grizzly bear videos. But what's your second condition? He pointed to the lake where his antique Grumman canoe was covered with snow. My second is that you'll never, ever again poke fun of that duct tape hole in my boat. I was ecstatic. It's a deal. Never mention it again. So the two of us headed west last 4th of July to challenge our hiking abilities, chattering on the road about all the vistas, wildlife, and places and spaces we would explore. Whenever possible, we took side roads, not interstates, 6,000 miles worth of roads, to visit 6 states and every national park and forest along the way. I pre-reserved several overnights at Forest Service fire tower sites. We would toss our sleeping bags inside primitive caretaker cabins, and in Montana, we would cook, read, write, and sleep in the Medicine Point tower itself. No RVs next to these Boundary Waters single-use campsite cowboys. There are under 2,000 fire towers still standing in the U.S. from the heydays of over 8,000, Most fires are now monitored by satellite and drone technology, so many have become a historical treasure of sorts, just like the lighthouses on Lake Superior. Medicine Point was our most talked-about destination along our route. It was the only camp that we could actually sleep inside of the tower. My research said the tower was enclosed in thick glass, similar to a greenhouse, but the windows could be unlatched to fill the room with the scent of fresh, crisp mountain breezes. On the outside, the quarters were surrounded by a sturdy catwalk, complete with lightning rods, and the whole joint offered amazing 360-degree views of three states from 8,409 feet. Jim trusted me to do my research to book the towers, just like I trusted his superior map reading skills in the Boundary Waters. My first, but not my biggest oops, was trusting Siri to get us partway up the mountain to the short trail. Before dark, we would cook dinner, retire, and then watch the night skies light up. Siri got us close, but on the wrong side of the mountain. After removing large rocks and deadfalls, we ran out of road and gave up. Frustrated, we cautiously backed the car down the mountain until we found a spot to safely pitch our tent. We would drive down in the morning, fresh to greet a new day and get accurate directions, which we did. We lost our first night, but were jazzed in the morning, ready to climb our tower. I pulled off the road, parking tight to a ridge. I whipped out my crumpled sheet about how to access and unlock our tower. Oops, number two was an even larger mistake. I read the smaller print. It's a 4-mile, at times rugged hike to the top from the trailhead. Stay hydrated and bring plenty of water. I figured that I can hike 7 miles around my lake in 2 hours, so 4 miles going uphill would be about the same. We were dispersing our supplies between two packs when an eager dog jumped into the back of my SUV. His owner quickly reclaimed him and was sporting a well-worn leather cowboy hat. "Greetings," he said. "Are you the party supposed to be camping up top last night? Guess my dog Jake would rather stay with you than run up the mountain with me." I felt like a Touron, that's part tourist, part moron, explaining my driving up the wrong side of the mountain. "Not a problem," he said. "You'll make it today. Forest Service hired me and my horses pack out their tools and scrap from refurbishing the tower. Some of the wood had lead paint. Got to bring it down, all proper-like." Our cowboy angel then saved me from the huge third mistake I was about to make. "You want my team to haul up your water?" Jim pointed to his pack, a canteen dangling from a carabiner. "I think we're good. Got a couple quarts and a filter." Man in the cowboy hat paused, repositioned his hat, and said, "That's not enough. You'll need a gallon per day per man. Creeks are all down the valley. No water up top, unless it rains. It's been a dry summer." Later, I figured that a gallon of water weighs 8 pounds, and 3 days meant adding 48 more pounds to our packs. I started thinking about the climbers that die on Everest because they run out of oxygen. I envisioned the two of us sucking moisture out of the bitter roots to stay alive. Our good Samaritan headed up the trail with water for his horses and for us, calling out, "See you on my way down. Just keep moving. Watch the final ascent just before the tower. Can be tricky." We started up our mountain, enjoying the morning sunshine, cool temps, and solid footing, stopping at a scenic overlook for a lunch of PB sandwiches and Pringles. I handed Jim our canteen. "Did you notice that our cowboy friend was packing? Had it in a holster." Jim laughed. "Not a gun, Einstein. It was grizzly pepper spray. Didn't you read the trail signs? USF recommends it, you know, just in case." This resulted in a conversation and about how during our many years of paddling in the Boundary Waters, we never had a bear encounter. We knew the drill. Clean camp, hang food packs. If approached, make a crap load of noise. Jim pulled out his trail map and started reading from the backside. I responded to each bullet with my own smart remarks, basically to hide my fear that there might be a possibility a grizzly was going to attack my peanut butter-infused fingers. Jim barked out the instructions like a drill sergeant. "Number one, warning, always carry bear spray, preferably in a holster. You'll only have seconds to fire." "Duh," I said. "It's a 14-buck can of racket, and you'd be shaking so hard you'd douse me instead." "Number two, don't be a tease, and do not run." Okay, I said. I won't be a tease unless our bear is really sexy. Number three, if all fails, play dead. I had the last word. Jim, that's the easy one. No need to play dead, because we already both died from heart attacks. We stood up, shouldered our gear, ready to finish off this mountain, agreeing that if either of us died, we would bury the other's ashes in the boundary waters, where black bears, for the most part, can be trusted. The trail became more challenging. I was respecting the minimalist backpackers I had encountered during my superior hiking trail. Those hikers are a whole different breed than a paddler like me, with my Duluth pack full of a roomy tent, sleeping pad, fleece jacket, great rain gear, and a larder full of fresh food, and always surrounded by pristine waters. No need to have a horse carry it. Some dedicated hikers even spend up to $199 on carbon trekking poles to keep them moving, balanced. As I was tiring, I was occasionally stumbling, feeling stress in parts of my body not used to taking such a pounding. Ankles, arches, knees, calves. During steep stretches, I was only focused on my footing, failing to notice the beauty all around me and never looking down. I finally needed to stop and fashion a makeshift pole for a crutch, and that helped. The switchbacks were more level welcomed relief in between the rises. It got to the point that frequent water breaks were spent standing up, as sitting down and getting back up was more difficult. Runners and other athletes talk about hitting a wall, then overcoming it, and then finishing with ease. Jim and I hit two walls, culminating in long naps right on the trail. Fortunately, the horses did not trample us on their descent. The best thing about a great paddling or climbing partner is when they help pull you up when you are weak. It's starting raining after nap number two, just a light storm, but it made the trail slick. I caught up with Jim and said, maybe we should make camp before it gets dark. He flipped me an energy bar. No can do, old man hiker. Failure is not an option. What are we going to tell our grandkids? It got tough, so we quit. The guy with the leaky canoe was now giving me philosophy for life. What is he going to tell my grandkids if I slip off the ledge, splattered on the rocks below? I gave him a weak smile and forged ahead. We could now see the tower, not a mirage, but really on top of the mountain. Our goal was still about an hour away, which would mean hiking in the dark if we stopped for another nap. Then I heard Jake barking. We stepped off the trail to let the horses pass. The team made their descent look so effortless. We were too proud to ask our savior, sporting the cowboy hat, how much further. Passing, he gave us a thumbs up and just said, take it step at a time. You'll beat the dark and it'll be well worth your efforts. All I recall before the summit was leaning on my hiking pole, dragging my burning feet and repeating affirmations, short prayers of gratitude for all the people, friends, and abundance I was blessed with. And it worked. My attention on others took the focus off my aching body. Jim's final burst of energy got him to Medicine Point's top step ahead of me. He was waiting on the catwalk and refused to open the door until we could take a selfie and summit together. The hand-painted sign on top said 8,409 feet. A piece of cake for many climbers, but any higher, I would have needed my own oxygen and another bottle of Aleve or at least a couple snorts of fine scotch. We had 3 days to recover, enjoy our abode and the land around it. Unlike Cheryl Strayed, I did not throw my excess weight off the trail. I needed my laptop to document this journey, and writing with a 360-degree view of three states was awe-inspiring. We were two grown men, both grandfathers now, and jumping up and down like little boys on Christmas morning when taking in the magnificent sunrises, sunsets, and walking the catwalk at midnight to catch the Montana skies ablaze with light, meteorites streaking. The evening sky afire from our Medicine Point fire tower. I told my family that this was my first and last once-in-a-lifetime climbing experience. However, last week, I discovered there are some fine fire towers in Colorado. Now that I've tamed Medicine Point, I might be ready for the next one.
Thanks to Mike Elliott, Gail Blackmer, Jeremiah Lind, and Jake Dodge for being part of our program today. My name is Michael Goldberg, here at this time every week on KAXE, KBXE, where you know we just keep on truckin'.